As we begin test the 2019-2020 financial year, marks the 5th year of existence of the community incident claims in the system. The mandate of the system or the grant is informed by Section 39A of the Constitution, as well as the National Development Plan, which commits government to increase adults and youth participation in this program to 1 million by 2030. As I've already indicated, the program is regulated in terms of the continuing education of the youth. Given the fact that we inherited 9 different operations of the system from this province, and so in the past 2 years, we have been trying to establish a system in terms of developing policies and developing regulations in order to ensure the functionality of the system. The purpose of the program is to plan, develop, implement, monitor, maintain, and evaluate national policy, program, assessment, practices, and systems for community education. The program is made up of 4 sub-programs: program management, systems planning, financial planning and management, education, training, development, and assessment. In addition to this, there are some of our officials in the head office. There are 28 of us in the branch. But you will also find our presence in the regions. As indicated in the slide, and you will also notice the differences in terms of the numbers, human resource capacity per province. And in some provinces, for instance, in the Northern Cape, there are only 7 people who are supporting the rest of the province. And graphically put, you can see that the first cluster are officials who are in the central regional office. And the central structure are our officials who are operating in the district, supporting the central government. And then the last cluster refers to totals per region. The functions of the branch are supporting management and councils, as well as monitoring and evaluating the system performance against the set indicators. Every year we produce a system performance report just to determine what direction the system is taking. We provide leadership in the development of CT for the strategic plans and annual performance plans. We align, because these centers are delivering service for the department, and therefore we have to assist the CET, the 9 CET colleges, to develop their strategic plans and annual performance plans aligned to that of the national department, because we deliver through them. We are also responsible for assisting colleges to enter into partnerships for the use of infrastructure for college sites, and we set up financial management systems. We are responsible for distribution of funding, and we also monitor compliance with supply chain management practices, prescripts, and financial performance. And it is our responsibility also to manage and coordinate curriculum development processes and ensure that the development of quality learning and teaching is of high standard. We also monitor and support curriculum delivery and assessment in CET colleges, that is ourselves at head office and our colleagues who are supported in the regions and in the district offices. We're also responsible for policy development in relation to the development of lecturers. Now, in 2015, we actually inherited 3,276 centers from provinces. The numbers are indicated. And we clustered each one of those into one community college per province. And now the process that we are engaging in, as will be evident earlier, is to test the efficiency of these many centers so that we can ensure whether we can rationalize and consolidate some of them. We also want to have the articulation of the national paper on post-school education and training implementation discipline. We have translated the outcomes of the NPP set and matched them against the strategic objectives which are in the CET sector plan, which was approved early this year, around February this year. So that there is a specific plan on implementation of the white paper, which is aligned to the national plan for the whole department. Arising out of that sector plan, we have also articulated many people had too many ideas as to what the system should do. And then we have to consult and fashion what would be an appropriate vision of the system, which is a differentiated system that opens up diverse, flexible, and accessible quality, lifelong learning opportunities for individuals and communities so that they can improve their quality of life by progressively articulating into further learning, employment, and for sustainable livelihoods or sustainable entrepreneurship. How do we work? The model indicates that we continue with academic programs. Greater part of our enrollment is in this kind of academic programs. In other words, including your AET level 1, 2, 3, and the GTC. But by the time the province is transferred this function to us, some of the provinces have already dedicated the retreat programs. If you fail after 3 years being supported by the DBT, they move you into the centers. And the majority, for instance, of the students in the CET college in Gauteng, the majority are matriculants. Before we took over the function, the province took a strategic decision because they don't have spaces for the teachers. These people were supported by the then adult learning centers. However, in terms of the mandate given to us by the white paper on post-school education, we also are beginning to introduce formal occupational programs. The pace at which the formal occupational programs are going to be introduced is going to be largely dependent on the accreditation and the capacity of these centers to offer occupational programs, because for as long as they have existed, they have been offering academic programs. And let's then talk to those programs which are not accredited by the social awareness, social appearance, for instance, like HIV awareness programs. For that, we don't have to get any certificate, as long as we get a service provider who's going to deliver that program, in the college. The work that we are doing at the branch at the moment, we are working with the Institute of South African Institute of Chartered Accountants. This project is meant to build capacity of financial management capacity of the CET college so that it can comply with the BFN. The support includes, among others, development and implementation of the financial management system. And the next thing that we are doing, we're collaborating with the at the national level, they are called the South African Catholic Bishops Conference. Because the our centers do not have their own infrastructure. Either you are in a school, after the school has closed for the day, and then you go free. And when there is vacant infrastructure which is not used, for instance, the South African Catholic Bishop Conference has got skill centers across the country. And then we have a partnership to make use of those centers in order to offer training. We also have a partnership with Project Literacy with the view of them assisting us to implement the new CET sector plan. And as you might recall, there's something which has been introduced by PBE. If you are not able to complete your matric after 3 years, then basically you are no longer their problem. And therefore, we have had to have an agreement with them that which relates to them giving us the material which they are using so that we can use it to support those learners who have not had. And the number of young people who are living in the system without a matric equivalent qualification is increasing at an alarming rate. And it contributes largely also to the number of people who are employed. Our strategic priorities for this year, as I indicated, is rationalization of the centers, or the current number of centers to ensure efficiency and quality. We are developing the financial management systems in CET colleges. We are improving strategies for increasing access and success to college education training programs. As you could see, the triangle that I put there basically means think diversify your offerings. Don't offer academic programs only. And therefore, that is what we are doing at the moment. We identified as a pilot to examine what would be the ideal way of offering community education training. We are piloting that in 54 centers, and those are the centers we're going to start strengthening in many areas in terms of partnership, ICT, and accreditation. Those are the areas we're going to do for implementing in the 54 centers. We also have been monitoring the implementation of governance policies by CET policies and inclusion programs. Chair, the said story about this program is to say it is underfunded is an understatement. The program just doesn't have money. You are expected to achieve quality through 2.5 billion throughout the country. This year, the budget is 2.5, next year, 2.7 billion. And then thereafter, the indicative budget is 2.8. Now, at that point, when we wanted to change the direction of TVET colleges, and government made funding available to recapitalize the institution, and if there is no funding for, we wish to do certain things, but if there is no additional funding for motivation, is going to be set on us. Just lastly, the challenges. At the root of the challenge confronting this program is actually underfunding. It manifests itself in the lack of appropriate infrastructure for school centers and skills training. If you want to move the centers to do skills training, please fund the purchasing of equipment and fund the changing of the current existing building so that they are suitable for the training that must be provided. lack of adequate training, learning and teaching support material, historic conditions of service. At the moment we have 9 conditions of service. Eastern Cape, one set, Gauteng another, Mpumalanga another. It is something we are working on to ensure that at least the country have a standard seamless way of handling conditions of service in the sector. The absence of human resource capacity to execute basic administrative functions and procedures in the system where unqualified people we inherited. Some of them are underqualified and some of them are inappropriately qualified. And if I'm asking you to teach plumbing and you may be qualified as a teacher, but you're not qualified as an artisan or a technician who can be able to train. And in other words, you have to retrain. You have to retrain majority of these people so that they are able to achieve what we want to achieve. Funding also causes limited time on tasks which compromise teaching and learning. In some, for instance, in the Congo, the centers are open for 2 hours only. In some instances, in KZN is 2 hours a day for 4 days a week. Now, if you're saying they must work 8 hours, you can't afford it with 2.5 million. You just can't afford it. And therefore, you have to cut on time, and then you're cutting on quality, and you're compromising the quality of training happening in these centers. The inability to administer, manage, and conduct CET examinations due to limited funding, the CET exams are still conducted by provinces. We have not taken them over yet because there is absolutely no capacity to take over that function. We entered into a memorandum of agreement with provinces to continue administering examination on our behalf. I've already indicated that when you look at our regional offices, they are in one province we have 38 of them, in another we have 7. And as a result, the capacity of regional offices to support the centers is completely uneven across the system. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. And let's take 5 minutes and then we'll decide what we do with the other companies and other stuff. The financial was very important. We need to get a sense of what's happening to the finances of the financial. Therefore, we must just get this one. I hope you are going to summarize, but still do justice to the presentation.
Thank you.
We must want to get the figures, the rest of the service, where are they going?
Just as a brief overview of how the competition is, these are the 6 programs that was alluded to in, of way finance falls under administration as a program 1. And then also within the office of the CFO, there are 7 programs that is run under the CFO. It's finance itself, supply chain management, asset management, public entities, development support, compliance unit, and then the last one is project coordination unit. To give you an indication of the allocation for the 1920 financial year, yearly it is per program, as I've just alluded to, that fee in the main, if you look at three universities, it's 73.4 per inmate, that's the represents about 82% of the budget at three. And you can also see that the total budget for the department is 89.4 billion rand. If you add skills related to it of 18.7, we have a total budget of 108.2 billion rand. The next slide just gives an indication of the budget cut that was presented for us. And these, you can see the total, the increase in baseline, that's the additional fund that we've received of the tune 220 million, which was added. But from the decreases, you can see all of those amounts to about a total of 260 when that was cut. So in the real terms, if you take the add, the plus, and the minus, we've been short of about 140.86. These were really covered into the budget as you've seen in the slide before.
Okay, just explain that.
You can see the total adjustment from the baseline is 140 million for the 1920 financial year. Mm. And that constituted of the...
What is this way? It is your... You've got a total amount of decrease of 260. But we've added 120, so you should pay that off the end of 2040, which is the amount for the current financial year.
And like I said, those were really calculated into our current budget really as in the previous slide.
But what you gave us was receiving 200 million.
The key grade colleges here is 200 million. Because it's in that's the amount that we have. That was the minus that we had to cut there.
Okay, that's all. have left it there,
huh? Right,
you fine.
Yes, indication of what we said earlier of the direct charges, which is the skills levy generated and collected by the South African Revenue Services. It's mainly for the CITES and the NSF, and that is calculated as an estimate by Treasury. And for the 1920 financial year, it is 18.8 billion. And as we have just also there, the breakdown between the CITES and NSF. Here again, Chair, I think what we try to just indicate, if we take the voted funds of 108 billion that we have, and we take away the skills there, the skills that we have, levied or transfers of 18.7, that leaves us with 89.4 billion as a vote of the department. But if you take off also the transfers, the compensation of employees, the earmark funds, we in real terms only have about 602 million rand for operations of the department. So you can see as a percentage of operation budget is extremely small in relation to the entire budget that we have. Just as an overview, for 18-19 financial year we spent about 73 billion rand, which was an underspending of 0.27%. Which is also similar to what we had in the previous financial year of 0.02% of underspending on the budget. And this underspending was mainly due to these three areas. One is compensation. And under compensation, you can see it was post that's not filled as well as post that became vacant. So also examples that we did not receive on time. As well as CET lecture payments that were not also that were rejected in the earlier year come on time. The second activity under that is the operational, and that's also other spending that you, because of cost measures and containment that we in place, that's a saving thing, and as well as transfer payments we didn't go through. One was for Commonwealth Learning Membership, and the second one was for India, Brazil, South Africa, Trilateral Commission. And the last one is then also an unclaimed add-on grant for the universities that constitute that 4.9 million offshore pay. To date, Chair, we've been able to close our books for the last financial year successfully. So also our financial statement has been audited. As we speak now, we keep cognizant and the purpose to finalize the annual report. We've also received an unqualified fraud in source. In the main, there was three programs that were affected. I think two of the programs were mainly because of audit information that we were not correctly audited about in this fund. So they had an impact on our information in terms of submitting, and that led to one of the issues that was raised there. And the last one, I think, was mainly just the CET. So those were the three areas of focus of our report, but it was unqualified. I've already mentioned the limited budget that we have of 602 million rand for operations. If we total into consideration the requirement by our treasury to also even further cut in the financial years, or empty financial years, over 5, 6, and 0%, it seems to be inevitable. We had a discussion with treasury about 2 weeks ago on the future of the DG. It is making it clear that we have to further cut the budget, and we're still trying to get our heads around it as to how we need to apply that. Whether it's further cutting or are we going to take different programs to reduce the cut there. If you take 602 million, for example, and we cut 5% of that, that equals to about, just say, 30 million or in, which means you have even less on your just on operations. Then other challenges that we're battling with is the up to now, we're trying to clear our engagements with National Skills Fund on access strategies to be less dependent on ASF as funding. Also, we're working also with the charting of a risk is still known for non-compliance to register requirements. We've been quite successful up for the last financial year, but to keep to that standard, it's still a high risk for us. And of course, also this drastically reduce that. Drastically reduce does not mean good enough because we want to be at the zero tolerance for the 30-day compliance with payment. I think, Chair, I think that's also just my on the finances.
Infrastructure for Nongoma and Kulai. I think it's one in the same college. Nongoma and Kulai is I was talking about four different cities. Nongoma is the last. It says Nongoma and Chukwuemeka. I wanted that to answer. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I want to ask at universities, the distinction between universities of technology and academic universities. It seems to me as if universities of technology become a little bit invisible, because we are referring to historical disadvantaged universities or institutions, and now if I understand you correctly, and I would just like clarify from that, is the B-Tech disappearing completely, or just certain B-Techs disappearing? What is the status of the degree of the B-Tech? And wouldn't it maybe make sense to, as it has been, regard universities of technology as a separate unit, like when they were technicals, or do we stand with a amalgamation of the two categories of universities? What's the thinking on that? On the pipeline of creating a pipeline of academics, I wondered if there's anything regarding women who have been out of the working place, maybe to tend to children or whatever. Sometimes women are very well qualified, and then they say between 30 and 45 they move out of the working place. And do we have specific programs to take them back into academic reports? Well, I don't need to say why, I think it's obvious. About feedback, I actually cleared up everything in tea break. On the skills part, I would say that even as of course I missed your surname. I'm just wondering what are the skills or the traits that we get golden medals in which traits are we better than the rest of the world? Just for the sake of curiosity. And then about community education. I wondered can the initiative come from the community? Can a group, let's say a cooperative, or a school with a workshop, or a collective of, say, farmers or business owners, say, we have specific skills that we want to teach to some people. It's not a coherent or a comprehensive qualification, but we just want to do training, but we want to take the initiative. Is that possible, or can the initiative only come from the department? And for the acting CFO, I would just want to convey my condolences.
What condolences?
From the cuts. Let's be focused.
Thank you very much for that. Maybe I must start on a lighter thing that's not from finance. I looked at those numbers and I realized that in the sphere of the world, there was a bit confused between millions and billions with serious complications. You can imagine ourselves with no qualifications and might be moment. But I think I should still be a the acting. And then I share the principles of the parent, not yet the breakdown of which university and how much. But before I did this acting here for you, I would like to know if we have calculated how much we pay bank fees and to which bank. I'm just curious on that one. That was my item. But maybe let me start with investing. I think Honorable Boshoff almost covered me with the phasing out of the future concerning investments of technology to advanced diploma and head collected that officer. If my knowledge is correct, this would have been the last year of BTEC. If you have not registered, let's say for example you have a diploma, you have not registered for BTEC. Next year you can't register for BTEC. This would have been the last year of intake. If next year they think that nothing of BTEC will continue if you have registered this year but not completed, like the one who's not there. Maybe take us to what were the problems? Why are we, I heard you said of problems with the ambushes with BTEC. What are the real problems and how will that, those things affect those with BTEC who got there before in the future? What is it that they can do in order for, if it will be problems for them in the future for those who will be seeking employment? What is it that they can do in order for them to get their BTEC transferred or changed into advanced diplomas and those in the future we have? That would be number one. Number two, on accommodation, you spoke about the seminar on sphere touched on it also. The university, 200,000 university owned there. Maybe if you can take us through there, what do you mean? University owns. Are we talking about the university owning a residence, or are you talking about the university also accrediting residences near the university for accommodation? What are we talking about? I was hoping that that would have been clear earlier on, because I think with at least where I come from, we've got the transformation agenda that we want our government to push on. We wanted to have a follow-up on that part, but maybe we can have it after this meeting. Well, then as far there's an idea that there are audit statements now from the CFO the audit outcome. We have an unqualified audit report now because of what they submitted. I heard also that there's a case of a young girl, I'm not sure whether it's from somewhere in the Eastern Cape, I think in Russo, an official of LS was born at 7-0 there in that rather account. And they are 14 million of zero in the money. There's a case.
14 million.
14 million of money. It's a lot of money. And I'm told that here on the news that within the first time she used 20,000. So I let you check if it's useful.
I know, so there's a
case coming to them. Maybe you can brief us on how far is the case. I know there's a criminal case, whether it's a criminal case or a civil case, but there's a case going on. And what is it that the department is pursuing there in Kwaitak? I'm very happy that yesterday, we informed them that from Friday you are going to UT. My son was very happy. I don't stay far from UT. And stay far, but not very far from UT. I'm very happy that you are putting them under administration. Among other things, it's not going to be a problem on UT. This one touches me. the issue of there's a silent takeover of all institutions of higher learning in South Africa by our brothers and sisters from Africa. And I think it's a silent takeover because what we seem to be very aware of, they're taking same woman in the institution. And some of the money that were given to this institution for funding the bazaars and so forth, they then afford the further or fellow brothers and sisters from African opportunities to get bazaars. So therefore, all this money that we are putting in for the 2 million rands, for the 2 billion rands, the owners begin to speak of billions of them. And those bazaars, most of them, they don't then seek to achieve or achieve what they seek to do. Because the bazaars are then afforded to our brothers and sisters from Africa. And I don't sound like I'm xenophobic. I'm not. I'm just, I hope I sound okay, because I have a problem with us having a noble cause that instead of achieving it, we're not achieving it. So it's a problem. And I think it's one of the problems at the UT. I was hoping also that you will also go into detail about this university, the University of Technology, and approved under administration. If I'm not mistaken, MedTech is one of the most technical, or is not, what is it called now? Constituent of Technology. I'm sure it's also one of them. And I heard Ugoe is also one of them in Northern Barcelona. I think you may also mention Unimed, among others, who are the administration. Maybe if we went into details of what causes a department to, or what were the serious problems with this university that caused you to put them under administration. I would be very interested in hearing some of those things. I fully agree with them being under administration. There's a case of a VTEC student who, if I'm not mistaken, who wrote somewhere in May a magistrate's exam. They've not received their marks because the lecture at the time alleged that his car was broken into and he can't release, he can't mark those results because he can't verify whether the exam script was were the ones that are supposed to be there. So he alleges that somebody must have broken into his car and swapped his script or her script with the proper script that got written outside the exam, the name or somewhere, and therefore refuses to mark those things. So other students who may not have been involved with those things, and then accepted. You can't get their results. So as you go on Friday to beauty, I know there were 3 places, as I told you, and staying far, but not very far from there. So I made some of the challenges. So these are some of the challenges I think we must prepare for you to go and speak some children. I think we must also give credit where it's due. The report says we have 50 colleges and we have only one in administration. Maybe we must share notes with the colleagues at the university, University of Technical Technology. Because I think there is that space might be doing much. You spoke also about funding. you are giving grants to students. I heard correctly. For maintenance and repairs. Again, what is it that we have monitoring systems in place to ensure that those who are appointed to do these things, they fit the agenda of the transformation agenda. Because if the one people are going to give a devil call, all the powers of the principal, for example, of Tibet, all the powers to, I might go and appoint my friend, the Honorable Mukhajwa, to do repairs and not necessarily give us a competitive business. Do you have, or just give them money and hope that that they will be conscious to do the right thing? So do we have sort of those systems in place? You also did not give us a breakdown. I even forgot the figures. You did not give us a breakdown of these 50 colleges that you have given those billions of millions, which one got how much? And did you get value for money after giving the money to go to your board check? Did you get value for money? I'm very interested in this because, as a former student myself, I know that at some point will be at odds with management on who gets what, who gets a president or what. So I know that if we don't do things right there, we are running a risk of having, I'm not sure if it's you or CT, you also said you are, some of the things are taking long to be done because of communities, local communities fighting about getting some of these things. So I think that's what we're going to see. That's what I'm going to say. And then, I guess that I'm from the mining space, and if my moment says, well, I said, well, but then, I'm not sure if it's done now currently by you guys or getting out of resources. This same quality system, the intense process, Jesus, I'm not sure if it's done by yourself, correct? Who because usually there are a lot of programs with, at least this year there were very few programs on that part. There was a program with leaking paper. I know that TVS, they spoke about stealing the exams and so forth. So I wanted to know if you're still doing that one. Let me just jump it after commencing on the program that I deal with the automated printers. Your report says you're going to deliver it, you're going to implement it by April next year. I think it's a good thing. We had a discussion outside that. My own views were serious economies that were telling is, in my view, by fake trade test companies were giving me a trade test certificate saying that a qualified electrician can work some deep gold mine, but I don't know anything. That is why some of the mines, in my view, are closing down, the economy is not viable anymore because I think we did not close down enough on our side, this thing of I'm using fake trade test, I'm using fake certificate for people who are supposed to work in Europe. I think maybe we can also assist in that regard. I think our discussion outside of that might be Section 31 states. Article is like 7 of CETs. And I'm of CLT that spoke about. And I saw a very big number, 1,000 something for the money.
Let's be brief.
CLCs, the number of CLCs, they've got to matter at 1,000 and something and floating, I think, for 7. So I want them to understand that you're not supposed to increase diversity in a proportional manner as compared to the population of that particular area.
Thank you very much. Overall, thank you very much for the information provided today. Again, to reiterate what I said yesterday, agriculture will be comes to have a practical understanding of how to look like, how to function, that type of thing. And of course, that's particularly the space that I've not had the experience too, which would be TBS and CET. I'd like to understand in the regulation of, in the fee regulation framework, have we mentioned or spoken to percentage, and how do we take into consideration the missing middle? I'm of the view that the 300,000, I'm of the view that I haven't actually reached the missing middle. But I understand that it's going to be a gradual process towards the outcentralization of free education. But those two factors, the percentage and the inclusion of the missing middle in that. Can I also have an idea of when the bill on CAS, because I see that we have Central Application Service development on when it will be shared with us, the draft bill that is. I mentioned before with respect to the APPs, how we could alleviate pressure on the accommodation crisis by collaborating with the transport, the Department of Transport, and how we can make the usage of buses and trains in order to alleviate bridging accommodation. Have there ever been a conversation of that nature with the Department of Transport and the municipality? Is it possible? How do we actually make it work? And one of the, with all these administrations, all these universities that are under administration, how do we ultimately get HDI out of this vicious cycle? You know, it's still not new. So, you know, what is the department recommending? Because I know the DG spoke to it yesterday, but what do you think? I mean, I would go to the administration, then you have a new white house, you have a new management, and then 3-4 years' time, the product comes back here. So, you know, what could we actually do that could be sustainable in this space? The minister approved the appointment of the administrator of NASA for a second phase of administration until the 20th of August, 2020, my birthday next year. this done, does this mean that Rival Council is back? What does that mean? The Ministerial Committee of Inquiry, when is it going to be appointed? That's on page 7. Can we regulate representation in governance structures? Let's think of councils that have DDCs that are, you know, ones that necessarily come in. Is there a way for us to regulate that and not become sort of a percussion? How do we ensure that is a thing? And again, I don't want to make my own research, I'm just trying to put a burden on you. But ultimately, I want to speak to the government. What does the Higher Education Act lead to in terms of representation of the numbers, right? So, Honorable Gates spoke to we have one president or one student representative through the president in the council. Is that because of the Higher Education Act, which they informs the university's statutes, or so where does the change then come in and where we make it as where we influence as members of parliament? In terms of the policy of African Languages and Higher Education, I actually have a conversation with the Department of Basic Education, because I think it's problematic for us to want to there needs to be continuation. If we want to have higher African languages as a medium of instruction in the university, we need to get it right to be easily and ultimately fit young people for failure. So we need to be in sync between BEE and higher education. And I'm asking the question in Khaldeh, because I sit in a board there, so I'm able to ask that question there. But on a national level, has BEE, so the Language and Education Act, and that act in itself is very problematic as it stands. So if we're unable to influence that as higher education, we're not in sync. So the one place is not in sync with the other, and I think we need to be having that conversation. In terms of the policy of internationalization of higher education, in the context of decolonization, how does that look like? Then the ownership of student centers. So we speak to entrepreneurship development in the higher education program. Having had the privilege of going to institutions of higher learning in other parts of the world, I've seen how they sort of inculcate the culture of entrepreneurship by allowing students to own they own the student center. They run it like they run the business. And various student organizations hire space from there. But the general income, it's like some interesting business model. And they run it. And I don't know if by law it is possible for us to try and pilot such in one of our institutions and see how it can then build a level of entrepreneurship and business orientation within young people in our country. So I mean, one of the universities that does practice this is Ryerson University in Canada, and I don't know if we could pilot some of Africa. And then in terms of the conversation around the African continent and international scholarship program, and then a couple of years ago, I remember, and I don't think it's been resolved. Our brothers and sisters from across the continent said that, okay, you guys, you are going to enjoy and play 3 months forward, but and we are there with you on the picket line. But what do we sort of, where's the inclusion of us? But trying to be the leading country across the continent, we said that there needs to be some sort of relations that could form between ourselves of Africa and other countries in the continent to say that how do this perhaps regulate fee for African funds? Is it possible? I remember the minister at that time was commenting, or Honorable Divine, and he spoke to a conversation within the AU, in a committee that apparently called High Education Council or something like that, not Council of the AU. And he spoke to that day, and I want to know, have we been able to have that discussion on how we can regulate fees and the bias toward the African product. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thank you so much, Chair President. Good afternoon to everybody. My question will be based on hopefully four themes. The one is practical implementation. The second one is oversight, as one of the quite mentioned. Number three, timelines. And the last one will be around monitoring and evaluation. The first question I have is, how does DHEC support private universities? Because, like the chairperson of the question, we'd like to see a breakdown of that. And what exactly do they support private universities with? Number two, in terms of BTEC, I was partly covered in terms of whether it's going to be phased out completely by comprehensive universities, or are they going to change all the programs to allow diplomas? But beyond that, BTEC students in these institutions don't get funding from MSF. And if they do get funding, they only get a portion of the funding. And I remember the presentation that was done yesterday indicated that they had a certain level in terms of BTEC. So when you locate the funding of BTEC students, or what wants to go with students, these are the fact that you've got undergraduates, postgrads, and they basically lie in between. Thirdly, I saw that there's a target in terms of how many students would like to increase in terms of universities over a period stipulated in documents from yesterday, versus the targets for accommodation. I think all the honorable members that spoke about it. There seems to be a very massive gap in terms of we want to enroll X amount of students, but we only want to build X amount of residents. How do you balance that, those two targets? I welcome the absorption of nursing and agricultural colleges into the sector. I think it's very important. In terms of timelines, when is the end? Yesterday I asked a question around finance, and I don't believe it was answered. I think there's about 30 billion allocated to MS funds, and I asked in terms of what is the sustainability of us funding. No, I don't want the politically correct answer, or something that's going to make it comfortable. But what is the sustainability of the model we use to find students in terms of a free fee for higher education model for the poor, subsidies for the missing middle? I would like to just get an indication from the department, maybe the acting CFO can maybe give guidance in terms of that. In terms of the University of Fort Hare, in particular, the DG is not yet. I can pardon you for that, Chair. In terms of the University of Fort Hare, the pity that DG is out, I wanted to ask a question. I mean, I worked a lot for the University of Fort Hare, once through university, now from the university. I would like to believe that the Vice Chancellor that was there was actually trying to get things back together. But the university is under administration. Maybe if I can get a background of what exactly is happening there, how long the administration will take place, what is the key focus, and to maybe get a report back on those things. And I believe that there must be a push where previously disadvantaged or historically disadvantaged institutions that are basically physically failing in terms of governing these institutions must be able to be held to account and come and report to the committee. Now, and I would like to get the intelligence of the committee on the University of Fort Hare and who's actually reporting to the committee, because we would like to ask some questions about oversight role to understand, you know, what exactly is happening. A lot of money has been pumped into those institutions, but the governance and the administration of them seems to just continuously be failing. And then lastly, around universities, I appreciate the entrepreneurship part of it being taken seriously. I know, for example, now from the university administers a postgrad program on it. I just want to check whether is there going to be an undergrad program discussion proposed moving forward. I'm glad that the director general of TBET, or DDG under TBET, is here, because that's the problem. And I just have questions when we direct to you regarding that. I just wanted to ask, since TBET colleges are administered or under the administration of the Department of Higher Education, what role do managers and bodies like councils in those institutions play vis-a-vis what role the department plays? Because we need to be able to distinguish the two. If I was to go to an oversight in Tibet College, the managers or the campus principal or the campus, the institutional principal, so not, that's not my jurisdiction. I can't answer that. That's the department or that's what the central office. I just want to understand what role do managers play vis-a-vis the department, vis-a-vis the council, because the setup is a bit different to the universities, the fact that they're not completely autonomous. I think in terms of the focus that we'll put there, the biggest focus for me is what have we raised consistently. I think it's something that we need to take seriously and maybe have a different outlook on. I see there's a lot of focuses, but I think the first focus should be around this issue of curriculum. There has been a discussion, and I've seen the presentation, that curriculum is under, you know, we develop the curriculum, we're going to finalize the process. I just want to know what the timelines are, because there's been a discussion on this issue of curriculum, but what are the timelines to finalize the TVET curriculum? Because once you finalize the TVET, curriculum is linked with what universities are going to take from the TVET or what contribution they're going to make, reasons what basic education is going to contribute in the process, industry, and science and technology. We then have to focus on the development of lecturers. I went to Lovedale College in King Williamstown, and you'll figure out that some of the lecturers that are employed there, it's a matter of fact, it's a matter of not knowing who's dealing with corporate services, or who knows the vacancies at HR, who's going to talk to the central office, the lecture department, and that person simply is not qualified for being teacher, right? And I don't know what monitoring systems we use to be able to audit what tools do we have in different colleges in terms of lecturers that are there. Are they qualified? Are we developing them? What are the timelines for developing them? In fact, the fact that we are changing the curriculum or we are developing the curriculum, how do we then make sure that we are still teaching the curriculum? So I think that's where I want to get to. And I had a question yesterday, just around the issue of lectures. I went to Ingwer College in Milan, where they teach portion of teaching engineering. And there was a center that was closed there, and maybe the DDG for CTOs might be able to assist on this. There was a center that was closed there. It's got mechanical, electrical, different types of engineering, where the students do practicals in the campus, but that center was set up to be able to test for them to qualify as either artisans or people that are qualified for skills. Who is supposed to give accreditation to those centers? That's the question I want to ask. Is it the campus, is it the department, and how do they follow the process? Because just both 5 years ago, it's got brand new, there's engines there, there's things to test, what do you call this, wheel alignment, all these other things that are there. But they have to be used. In fact, the buildings are dirty, there are birds dying in them. What accreditation, what's the process to be able to get accreditation? And in terms of linking that with lecturers, they are saying that they are not developed to teach or test that because they are not skilled enough to do that. So nobody came and did that for them. Then, in terms of keeping love, I just wanted to ask, I've raised this issue before. It seems that TVET college students seemingly sleep in different places, they eat differently, like they take different types of taxes that don't exist in the country. I don't know how we allocate their finances. Because they're seemingly less than universities, compacted by far. So I just wanted to check what is the issue there, what is the plan to make sure that you resolve it, so that we don't give them a substandard type of allowance. And the last three things on Tibet. The FRCs in Tibet colleges, I believe, are just completely disarmed. I don't think they actually have a say. I'll give you a practical example. I was talking to the DG yesterday about Ingwer College in Market, where lecturers have been on strike for almost a month now, saying that they're not going to teach it, do anything. And the SRC is not informed of what is happening and update
they basically default. They have no contribution that they may make in terms of standing up for students. So I just wanted to check, in terms of SRC building, SRC constitutions, making sure that the Department of Education Act is implemented in equal qualities in terms of having a student structure that is standing there for students, whose responsibility is to make sure that we develop that? Because I'm very interested in that. And you'll find that it's even difficult for political organizations that are represented in parliament, represented in legislature, represented in council, represented in universities to enter those spaces. But they're supposed to be representatives of students. So I just wanted to check in terms of whose responsibility Then this issue of funding. I want to check who distributes funding in terms of allowances. Because you'll find that in many instances, people colleges pay their lecturers using funds for allowances, right? Who administers funding? Is it the department that administers funding, or do we send the money directly to people colleges, or is it the tennis fund? And if there are offenses of that nature, what consequences are assessed for those institutions that actually utilize funding? I mean, I'm a finance scholar, but I understand that there's specific line items for everything that you need to account for. And if there's a specific line item that says student allowances, you take that line item to salaries, what consequences are there? Who takes responsibility for that? Because ultimately, you'll find that students, instead of receiving allowance from the team of college, when you're about to just finish registering, you'll get it in October. What are you going to do with it in October? Or get it in November and December? And it just puzzles me on how that happens. And I saw that there is a challenge in terms of data protection and maintenance. What are the timelines of making sure that we've got one system in the TBS sector so that we don't release the certificates late, so that we can be able to keep records and share those records when I need it, because I think it's a very big problem, and that's one of the contributing factors in the fact that we have very high unemployment rates. And lastly, the disability, I would like to do oversight, like on as I said, in the campuses that are being proposed right now. There's a few mentioned that some earmarked and identified, just to check the disability friendliness of those campuses. Because you'll find that in many TBS colleges, we either don't own the buildings as government, either municipalities own those buildings or they privately own. So how do we start building a sector where we have a challenge in terms of infrastructure? Maybe you can give detail in terms of how many of those buildings do we actually, that government own, that can be able to utilize permanently for the TBS sector. And the disability friendliness of the campuses being built right now is probably my biggest interest, as well as the infrastructure being inclusive of a very strong ICT infrastructure to make sure that we achieve the targets that we have. I'm very passionate about this thing, so sorry for taking so long.
Thank you, Comrade Chair. And look, I'm tempted to perhaps start from yesterday when we left here, because we couldn't even be afforded an opportunity to perhaps follow up the responses of God from the Father. And I think it's generally a misconception or a misrepresentation or misunderstanding or from the department in relation for them to come here and understand the role that we play as members of parliament. I will tell you why. There's this general, you know, schema or what we call characterization that young people, and this is how they must behave, and all that. And I can assure you that the moment we took that oath of office, we took the responsibility of taking care of more than 56 million South Africans. And we automatically cease from being young.
there's no way you can be happy if there's more than 50 million people looking up to you and hoping that the things will be done correctly. Now, back to yesterday's issue. There was a cancer matter that we are dealing with in relation to cancer, what the representation of students inside that particular country. And the response from the department was such that, you know, students are inexperienced, they are young, and, you know, and it's just trying the operation that they've been done for 2 years, the rest are gone. And I differ, and I'll tell you why. You go to the University of South Africa, you need to, anyone can go there, anyone of us who's here, you are allowed to go there and can really be elected to be in the classroom. Someone who stayed 40, 45 years, you are saying we cannot charge them with that responsibility of representing their fellow students in cancer. Precisely because they are students. So I think we must not confuse these, you know, narrative of saying they are students and therefore they are young and therefore they are irresponsible. We must reject that particular point. Now, going back to the same UNISA, I think we must start to deeply interrogate what is happening in that university of the people. And I think post-94, we are all aware that it started to have significant intake of African majority. Our poor black people are there registering with the University of South Africa. And I think we are taking a blind eye on that biggest university in the African continent. Because if you look at the throughput of, you know, the number of graduates in that particular institution is shocking. The number of dropouts in that particular university is shocking. Just in the past 2 years, we had 3 different registrars in that university be changed like that. You had 4 AT and TVCs that were changed at 80, they are 80, they will be 80. We're speaking about 80 DDGs in the morning, and we realized how problematic it is to always have people who are 80. If you need size west, there's always 80 people there. No one has a permanent portfolio there. In fact, we can tell you now that it is very important, Chairman, that we also consider summoning those chairs from UNISA to come to an account. Because UNISA, if we allow UNISA to continue the way it continues, we are not going to be left with the University of the people. This year alone, the university did not have enough capacity to re-enroll those who were coming back from the system. I haven't spoken about the new intake. Those who were already in the system, there's about more than 100,000 students who were unable to re-register in that university. And by the way, there will be a massive national shutdown in that particular institution. A massive one. We must warn you, because we are very close with them, we know what is happening. Students have registered in general, by the way. You know, UNISA is systematic, we do it online. They register some of the courses that are being phased out. And when, you know, they are helped to receive their assignments, they are being told, but you are not a student here. What are you talking about? And I'm speaking about thousands and thousands of students out there who are experiencing that particular problem. When the VC there from Makanya or something, extremely toothless. In fact, the chairman of council is running that university for him. We don't have law college in UNISA, by the way. It has been under administration for quite some time now. In that particular, it's a mess. And perhaps we must rethink the model on how the UNISA is being conducted. You know, because in general students are not coping, people are failing, they are not failing, things are not properly explained, and you know, it's a long distance learning, and you
you can't expect to work for such a lecture. Perhaps we must look into that and see how best we can improve the style of learning that particular institution. Also, we want to speak about the expansion of spaces in the universities and students. I think there's a little that government is doing in order to increase spaces in the universities and students. There's just so many students who qualify, who are bright, but because of space, they can't make it. And the university tell you, no, it's not like you are not qualified, but space constraints. I must never be tested on the basis that there is no enough space at the university level. Let it be a different reason, but not a space. Why actually the most industrial revolution? There are some courses you don't need to go in class. And perhaps you must try by all means to then channel those to be online courses. Because you don't need a class for some clumsy courses we're talking about that does not even have value in our economy. We need to relook into that. And the other thing that we must check is when we apply at the prospectus, of universities, they will tell you that for you to qualify to do a civil engineering course, by the way, I'm a civil engineer in profession. I know what I'm talking about. Now, basically, for you to be accepted, you must have level 6 of English, right? They say you must have level 6 of English. Besides math, science, and I see that. That's a compulsory thing. That if you want to be a scientist, an engineer, or a doctor, you ought to have them right. But they say English you must have 6. And with our own knowledge, they say you must get. They don't even consider it. They don't. It's not significant. I mean, it's a by the way. As long as the English part is well covered, then you are. It then gives advantage to white people or English-speaking people, you know, to be prepared before all African majority can be prepared. Because if their own indigenous language, they learn that language just seconds after they exited their own parents' womb. They've been natural to that particular language. You can't compete. You can't. You have to sit there and wait until you are taught at the, when you are starting to be prepared with English, that's certain that if you are coming from a village, your English starts to be proper in grade 10, 11. Then comes the failure of a very flamboyant high school or schools from basic, from early childhood even. They are very affluent, they speak English and they want it. Let's tell you that no, 6, level 6, otherwise you are not going to. So let's re-look into that. Because even how they count the score, the APS score, our languages are not really taken seriously. The issue of language is extremely important. Extremely important. And we must also check it because are there some of the other institutions that are still providing question papers in English and African only? Like a Potterstroom, not just university. They are still doing it even now. Where are we now? Because not only Afrikaners and English people in class. And if the lecture teaches in English and a fellow African do not understand, it's clear in the question paper it's well interpreted in Africa. He can easily understand. So some of us were under siege like that. We must wait and hope that we will understand few ways of English. And we must be judged with the same scale of who is smarter than who. Yes, because that's how we are going to be gauged. On the basis that we wrote the same question paper, even when it was advantageous to a certain class. It's very problematic, and let's zoom into that. Because we might be losing potential on the street like that, thinking that we are taking, you know, smart and clever people, like we are taking mediocre in the system. Because when you can read and write English, therefore, you are smart enough to do civil engineering. Whereas if someone who has even a better IQ, because IQ, to have a better IQ doesn't mean must speak fluent English. Right? So let us not deprive our nation of talent. There is too much talent in this country. Just that how systems are being arranged, it becomes a very, very, very serious problem. We won't speak of NSFAS, they will come here, we will deal with them when they arrive here. Now, I want to speak on teachers' colleges, because I think we are very frugal with the truth, Chairman. We are extremely economic with the truth here. I can tell you now, all of us who are sitting here know exactly what's the problem with teachers' colleges. And what is at the apex of the whole thing is corruption that is the very sector. It's the corruption that is the very in that sector. What we told on how much money is being spent on infrastructure and developing these colleges. But we reward those teacher colleges is a mess. It's a mess. I mean, it doesn't even justify 80 or 20% of that figure that they are speaking about. In some instances, we are being told that the money of infrastructure was taken to pay services and workers. Where is the risk if there are actual money that was supposed to be spent on remuneration and other services? There's a problem. In fact, when you go to Stephen's colleges, because I served as a president of the student command in the previous term, I know most of these chaps who are principals. They behave like bishops, you know, the village popes. When they are there, they behave like they are village popes. They are in charge of everything. They are even arrogant. Extremely arrogant because of the money they are looting in that particular land. They are looting. It's not a secret. They are looting. Heavy. Someone is not even ashamed that the car is driving inside the interior of that car. It's way better than its office and classrooms there, you know. You can't compare when you are in a class and then you go to this car and you enter a mall now. It's bad. It's bad. And if we are not honest about it, nothing will get right. We'll keep on debating things and they will bring things that we are putting so much. Nothing happens. And no one faces consequences. Because they will only come here 2 weeks there, but they are going back to when they are leaving. Go back to Pretoria. They are going to report more. We met the committee on higher education. This one will discuss and these things will put them, will only remember them when it is important to do so. But I can tell you now, you can read my lips for nothing, I won't charge you. This thing is not going to be resolved if you don't approve. There's corruption that is happening in that sector. The honorable here from Western is correct when he says, you know, how TVET, ordinary. There's no one who wants to go to a TVET. No one will aspire to go there. It looks like a dumping site of the university. If you didn't find a space inside, they just throw you there. Oh, that's fine. The curriculum itself is a mess. It's a mess. What are you going to do? What with what? Who what? It's really a mess. I think let's look into that. We must take extremely serious challenge as a belief, because this thing of speaking and speaking is not going to help anyone of us. We'll speak forever. We've been speaking for quite some time now. Now there's a well just to with honorable member of the GA has said here. When he spoke about the composition of the SRCs in TVET colleges, this is how they manage. They go to a class and any fellow who frequently raises their class, that person becomes the SRC. I can tell you now, they get banned. Anyone who seems to be answering a lot of questions about whether I want to be the SRC of these people. And it happens, they don't allow pastors to participate. You can't, there's no fast, there's no student command of the year, there's no task in many colleges. They tell you, you are not even allowed to wear the gallia in the premises of this university, of this college. They tell you that. I mean, in a democratic country like this, what we told, what we must wear. It's happened, you can go ahead, you can go boom, 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 to their tables and ask, move, because I was wearing an overall of the year first. They had to call police because we refused. We raised it with your office, DPG, you know very well, before when we met in Swat. And that issue still continues. That's why you're speaking without action. It's immaterial. Extremely immaterial task. Those things are still continuing. I think also the department was not giving attention. The community education and training. I mean, as a country, we really want to significantly decrease the level of literacy in the country. We must take this thing extremely seriously. To educate our elders, because there are some of the decisions old people take that compromise the whole country, because they are not, you know, they are not well informed, they are not literate, they can't read and write. And, you know, I mean, we can draw an example of Cuba. What happened after they left a vast college of educating the nation? I think this community education must be taken extremely seriously. And there must be resources pumped to make sure that our adults get this proper education and they are able to read and write and be able to take decisions. Because we know that many of these things that are happening, corruption that happens in Tibet colleges, these old parents, they don't know, they don't see anything wrong because they can't read, they can't write. A principal of a Tibet does come and speak English. They agree, anyone who spoke English, they think they are correct, even when they were speaking nonsense. So if you have an educated nation, no one will just, you know, drive on top of their heads. You will be held accountable. I think this must be given the attention it deserves. And lastly, I want to check who that these service seekers, who gives these people, you know, who owns them? Because I don't understand. There's just too much inquiry in terms of, you know, from the department to the fellows who are owning these centers. But there are fellows there who are extremely corrupt too. Extremely. There's a fellow in Ebule, he was using a church to you know, to train these learners or students. Right? A church. And when we went to that church, those students have been complaining. I'm telling you, they play cards, you know, every day they go there. Because there's nothing to do. They get there, they play cards, and they're all over. Then the next thing they meet that fellow, he then claims the man. Yes, in the report here, we are going to be told that we have so much number of centers that are progressive, that the pastor there, he's a pastor by the way, he doesn't see anything wrong. He doesn't, and luckily when those students came to us, they came on the basis that they were not getting paid. We're not chairman. I'm summarizing. They came because they were not getting paid. See, now we thought, well, let's just get deeper and understand what's happening. We get there, we find a church. It's bad, my man. But, okay, just in a nutshell, Chair, in a nutshell, you need someone to be someone today. Then you need someone. It can't be that the entire executive is empty. I mean, it's not on. It's not on. And more than 100,000 students are out of the system just at ceremonies like that. It can't be tolerated.
line she said to the one and just answered two. So I see all of the members have got great appetite to engage. So we are left with the three members to raise questions and comments. So if we follow the pace, by the time we finish here, lunch will be done. And we can't continue to engage without feeding ourselves here. So either we adjourn now, go to lunch, and when we come back, we allow prayer of our colleagues to engage. I've been deliberately allowing you to go on and on because the workshop, I think we need to get the use of everything. I didn't want to stop anymore. So I don't know, members, what do you think? We break now?
Yeah.
We go for lunch, come back after 15 minutes, and then continue from there. We will get responses of the department. So yeah, we let us get now and then come back and say to latest for us to.
Molto.